This week, New Zealand's Muslim community is mourning and burying 51 men, women and children who were murdered in attacks on two mosques in Christchurch. Their alleged killer is a white neo-fascist born and raised in Australia. Since the terrorist attack, political and religious leaders and ordinary citizens have been asking if the angry language around immigration and Islam has led to this tragedy. Before she became a federal Labor MP, Dr. Anne Ali was an international expert on terrorism and the founder of the group People Against Violent Extremism. Anne, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Andrew.
You've studied terrorism and extremism very closely. Where is the connection, Anne, between rhetoric and violence?
I think it's quite difficult to draw a direct line between what we would consider media or political rhetoric and the violence. But it does feed into the environment. So for terrorism to occur, it needs to have an environment in which the belief system or the worldview of the terrorist organisation or the terrorist group or the cause or the terrorist himself or herself is reinforced and echoed. So the kind of rhetoric around, for example, in white supremacist movements, kind of rhetoric around immigration and immigrants and takeover and us versus them feeds into that. In a similar vein, the rhetoric around, again, a kind of a battle of Islam against the West, that all feeds into violent jihadist propaganda and terrorism as well.
Yeah, in your extensive research, Anne, did you ever find any similarities between the white supremacist, the kind who exacted this appalling toll on 50-plus innocent Muslims in New Zealand, and say the religious extremist, be it the violent jihadist or be it the fanatical monk who's whipping up a pogrom against Muslims in Burma? Did you find any common factors there?
Absolutely, absolutely. The basis of them are both exactly the same. There's a kind of a feeling or a belief that there is victimhood, that, for example, your people, whether that is Muslims or a religious group or white people, are under attack. There's a kind of a belief in some kind of conspiracy theory that attack is being waged against your people. Then there is a sense of group belonging and group think, that you are part of this group that is being attacked. Then comes with that a dehumanization of the other. So I am being attacked, my people are being attacked, those who are doing the attacking are non-human. It then becomes, with that dehumanization, a disgust and a classification of the other as the enemy. And then comes the point of, well, I need to fight. It is my duty to fight and take up violence as the only solution to eradicating the threat against me and against my people, my group. And this is the basis that's common across all forms of terrorism throughout history. It's groupthink, it's social identity, but core to that is this idea that somehow your group and by extension, you yourself, is under attack, and this belief that there is a war or a battle, and that the only solution to this war or this battle is to take up arms, and therefore it is your duty to do that.
Mm. And you've always believed in keeping the conversation going, not trying to shut down the conversation. That's one of the things that brought you back to this program so often before you were in Parliament. I just wonder now if the results of the conversation, be it about immigration, be it about religious extremism, jihadist extremism, if the result of that conversation can end with the tragedy that we saw in Christchurch, is it worth having the conversation?
it's absolutely worth having the conversation. Terrorism is essentially about communication. It was the anarchists who first coined the phrase propaganda by the deed. And when the anarchist wave took hold, it was really, they were publishing, it was with the printing press, they were able to get their message out all across the world. But that wasn't enough to mobilise and motivate action. So they coined this kind of propaganda by the deed. So while terrorism has an ultimate goal of terrorising, of killing, of destroying human life, there is an underlying goal there of communicating a cause, communicating through the act of violence. Now, in that case, then, communication being communicating alternate worldviews, communicating alternatives to violence as a way of getting across your message or getting across your cause, teaching young people that violence is not an appropriate form of communication and an unacceptable form of communication, you cannot justify it, teaching people to talk about their similarities as well as their differences, and through communication, accepting and respecting difference.
I mean, you and I know what could well happen in the next few months, that, you know, if there is another jihadist attack, and we already have the leader of ISIS calling for reprisals, but if we have another Paris or another Brussels or another Manchester, all the reflection that people have now had about that kind of loose talk in the wake of Christchurch could end up just disappearing, and we're back to the old arguments, aren't we?
Well, we're already seeing some of that disappearing. You know, already there is a section of our society who is saying, well, hang on a minute, you know, why are we having so much sympathy for this? What about the other? And you know, people even in our politics who are saying that, well, this was just a form of retribution. But I would say this, that retribution and revenge is a core of all forms of terrorism and has been since day dot. In fact, Richardson's three R's of terrorism are revenge, renown, and retribution, and there are profiles of the retributional terrorists. So this idea that, well, I'm going to get you because you got my people, and you see it in the messages that are left behind by terrorists of varying ilks. Mohammed Siddiqui Khan, who was the leader of the London bombings, said, I'm doing this because your people are killing my people. And so this idea that, you know, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind, I think is something that is very key to this whole conversation. And that is why it's important to talk about it. That is why it's important to communicate that terrorism is a cycle, and a cycle of violence. How do we stop that cycle? How do we stop that violence? We do that by teaching people that an aggressive response, a violent response, is not the correct response.
Just finally, Anne, you spoke there about the eye for the eye, you know, leading to the whole world being blind. It's a very important point. What about what Albert Camus once called the algebra of blood? You know, and you cited it there. So people say, well, 50 people were killed in Christchurch, but 70 people were killed in Paris or something like that. How do we avoid that cycle of justifying by saying, well, greater numbers died in this particular attack?
I would say terrorism is not about counting dead bodies. It goes beyond that. And yeah, this kind of equivalence of one form of terrorism against another form of terrorism by counting dead bodies really does nothing. That the pain that is felt in the wake of a terrorist attack is the same pain that is felt whether it is one person or whether it is 2,000 people. And one person dying at the hands of a terrorist is one person too many. So I think we need to elevate the discussion, elevate the dialogue around terrorism beyond this counting of bodies and beyond this counting of numbers and who did what and who did what. Terrorism is the scourge, regardless of where it comes from and what shape it takes.
Well, you always elevate the conversation, Anne. Terrific to talk to you. Well, no, you really do. That's why we have you back. Dr. Anne Ali, she's a federal MP, but long before that, Anne was an expert in counter-terrorism, and she founded the organisation People Against Violent Extremism. Thanks for being with us so much on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Pleasure. Thank you so much, Andrew.